Chapter 12, Your Primary Aim. The chief characteristic of the volitional act is the existence of a purpose to be achieved, the clear vision of an aim. Robert Assagioli, The Act of Will. I doubt that by now you'd be surprised to find out that I don't believe your business to be the first order of business on our agenda. You are. Nor will you be surprised to hear that I don't believe your business is your life, although it does and can play a significantly important role in your life. But before you can determine what that role will be, you must ask yourself these questions. What do I value most? What kind of life do I want? What do I want my life to look like, to feel like? Who do I wish to be? Your primary aim is the answer to all these questions. Consider it from another perspective. I'd like you to imagine that you're about to attend one of the most important occasions of your life. It will be held in a room sufficiently large to seat all of your friends, your family, your business associates, anyone and everyone to whom you are important and who's important to you. Can you see it? The walls are draped with deep golden tapestries. The lighting is subdued, soft, casting a warm glow on the faces of your expectant guests. Their chairs are handsomely upholstered in a golden fabric that matches the tapestries. The golden carpeting is deeply piled. At the front of the room is a dais, and on the dais, a large, beautifully decorated table with candles burning at either end. On the table, in the center, is the object of everyone's attention, a large, shining, ornate box. And in the box is you, stiff as a proverbial board. Do you see yourself lying in the box, not a dry eye in the room? Now, listen. From the four corners of the room comes a tape recording of your voice. Can you hear it? You're addressing your guests. You're telling them the story of your life. How would you like that story to go? That's your primary aim. What would you like to be able to say about your life after it's too late to do anything about it? That's your primary aim. If you were to write a script for the tape to be played for the mourners at your funeral, how would you like it to read? That's your primary aim. And once you've created the script, all you need to do is to make it come true. All you need to do is to begin living your life as if it were important. All you need to do is to take your life seriously, to create it intentionally, to actively make your life into the life you wish it to be. Simple? Yes. Easy? No. But absolutely essential if your business is to have any meaning beyond work. Because if your business is going to become an integral part of that tape, if your business is going to make a major contribution to the realization of your dream, if your business is going to become a significant component of your primary aim, you have to let your business know what that aim is. And how can you expect to do that if you don't know what it is? Do you see why your primary aim is so important to the success of your business? With no clear picture of how you wish your life to be, how on earth can you begin to live it? How would you know what first step to take? How would you measure your progress? How would you know where you were? How would you know how far you had gone? How would you know how much farther you had yet to go? Without your primary aim, you wouldn't. Indeed, you couldn't. It would be virtually impossible. As with mature companies, I believe great people to be those who know how they got where they are and what they need to do to get where they're going. Great people have a vision of their lives that they practice emulating each and every day. They go to work on their lives, not just in their lives. Their lives are spent living out the vision they have of their future in the present. They compare what they've done with what they intended to do. And where there's a disparity between the two, they don't wait very long to make up the difference. They go to work on their lives, not just in their lives. I believe it to be true that the difference between great people and everyone else is that great people create their lives actively, while everyone else is created by their lives, passively waiting to see where life takes them next. The difference between the two is the difference between living fully and just existing. The difference between the two is living intentionally and living by accident. Let me repeat once more that great quote by Don Juan in Carlos Castaneda's A Separate Peace. The difference between a warrior and an ordinary man is that a warrior sees everything as a challenge, while an ordinary man sees everything as either a blessing or a curse. So before you start your business or before you return to it tomorrow, ask yourself the following questions. What do I wish my life to look like? How do I wish my life to be on a day-to-day basis? What would I like to be able to say I truly know in my life, about my life? How would I like to be with other people in my life, my family, my friends, my business associates, my customers, my employees, my community? How would I like people to think about me? What would I like to be doing 2 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, when my life comes to a close? What specifically would I like to learn during my life, spiritually, physically, financially, technically, intellectually, about relationships? How much money will I need to do the things I wish to do? By when will I need it? These are just a few of the questions you might ask yourself in the creation of your primary aim. The answers become the standards against which you can begin to measure your life's progress. In the absence of such standards, your life will drift aimlessly, without purpose, without meaning. In that regard, your primary aim is the vision necessary to bring your business to life and your life to your business. It provides you with a purpose. It provides you with energy. It provides you with the grist for your day-to-day mill. That's what's been missing in my business, Sarah all but shouted. Me! How could I have been so oblivious to something so obvious? Don't be so hard on yourself, I said. We are all oblivious. Join the club. Let me tell you a story. There was once a young man who had recently turned 40, whose life seemed to be going nowhere. Somehow, he'd never grabbed hold of a career. His life had no purpose. College had somehow eluded him. In his first year at UCLA, he couldn't find anything to hold his attention, and he quit. He studied music as a boy, many said brilliantly. But in his early adult years, failed to find the conviction he needed to pursue it. Many different things attracted him: music, religion, mysticism, writing poetry, drugs, writing pulp fiction, money, none of them permanently. He took whatever jobs came along, and because of his natural and varied talents, he did whatever he did well. But even then, none of the jobs turned into anything with a future, at least not a future that attracted him. After leaving college at midterm, he drove to New York City to study art, quickly changed his mind, and joined the army, which sent him to Korea. His father died suddenly, bringing him home to care for his mother and two younger siblings. Sometime after, he met an exciting woman, took off to Europe, where they traveled from country to country on a motor scooter, and where he played saxophone and drew religious figures on the streets in front of cathedrals to earn enough money to eat. Finally, out of money and tired of the game, he and his woman friend were repatriated by the U.S. government and returned to New York City, where they contracted to drive a New York City yellow cab to L.A. to deliver it to its new owner. When he was 25, they married, had two children, moved to San Francisco, where the young man sold encyclopedias for a living, played saxophone on occasion, and became, over time, less young. Their life was a running battle. Eventually, after one too many rages about his wife's abuse of alcohol, her infidelity, and his lack of purpose, the whole thing came tumbling down into divorce. He immediately met a much younger woman, whose eyes shined like his ex-wife's didn't, who read his poetry and was touched by it, who listened to his music and was awed by it, was satisfied just to sit by his side, no questions asked. And though he continued to sell encyclopedias, and though his heartfelt need for connecting with something that smacked of purpose continued to pain him privately throughout all of this, his life took a more positive turn with this new young woman who eventually became his second wife. He went back to college, left the book business, studied contracting and construction so he could work with his hands rather than his mouth, moved with his new willing wife to Southern California, and maneuvered himself into framing jobs from which he was fired time after time until he learned how to pull it off. By this time, he was a man in his late 30s, beginning to do work that kids 20 years younger than him did. They regarded him on the job as something of a freak. His beard by now was down to his chest, his hair hung down over his shoulders, he wrote poetry at night, played jazz on the weekend, ate burritos with the Mexicans on the job, smoked dope in the evenings, and dreamed crazily about the future when he and his young wife would buy 20 acres in Mendocino County, build their own house with their own hands, raise a family, and have his two girls from his first marriage move in with them when everything was ready.